This is the State of Things, broadcasting live from the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences in downtown Raleigh. I'm Frank Stacio. The Mack family came to America from Lebanon in the early 1900s. They started as peddlers, carrying heavy suitcases of threads and textiles around the back roads of North Carolina. You can see those suitcases, along with letters and other personal artifacts, at the exhibit Cedars in the Pines. It showcases the stories of Lebanese-American immigrants. The exhibit's at the North Carolina Museum of History in Raleigh. It was curated by NC State History Professor Akram Cutter, and he is with us again today. Akram, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Also joining us are two other Lebanese-American immigrants. Berta Alchakar Powell is the owner of Raleigh Events Company, Bienvenue. Welcome, Berta. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Samir Salah, who is the owner of the Lebanese bakery, Neoman. Good to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Who's minding the store? It's almost lunchtime.
That's right. It's something really different than what I normally do.
Akram, tell us about this. Before you started this exhibit, you were actually working on an oral history project. Tell us how this exhibit came about.
Sure. So about 4 years ago, we kind of began this project of documenting the history of the Lebanese in North Carolina. And the impetus for that is that after 9/11, I think Arab Americans in general and the Lebanese in particular had come to be seen within the light of terrorism and as alien to American values and cultures. And what we wanted to do is explore this notion that we have been here for over 130, 140 years, and we have been part of the fabric of North Carolina and the United States. So we began this project through the Department of History at North Carolina State, collecting stories from wonderful people who have descended or our recent newcomers like Samir and Berta. And we have compiled all these stories in an online archive. And then our first project was a documentary also called Cedars in the Pine that WUNC actually broadcast, the TV station broadcast about a year ago. And then this second part of the project, which is the museum exhibit that's opening at the Museum of History. And both of them tell the story. They tell the story of the two waves, the first from 1880 to 1930 and the second, our wave, 1975 and after, and how these folks came from Lebanon at various times. They brought with them ideas, hard work, family, and they basically became part of the fabric of North Carolina, and they enriched it with their culture, with their food, obviously, as well as with a whole lot of other things that they brought with them.
Tell us about that first wave in the later part of the 19th century.
Sure. So the two waves are quite different, actually. Both of them were in many ways driven by the same impetus, which is to make a better life for themselves. The first wave was primarily farmers from villages in Lebanon. So about 60% of North Carolina came from one village, actually, called Hamena. And they come in these sort of chain migrations. So one person would arrive, then they would bring in their wives, their daughters and sons and brothers and uncles and nephews. And so it was a sort of extended family migration. They arrive here and they work as peddlers. As you said, they walk the back country, back roads of North Carolina, and they were the original Sears catalog, if you will, to the farmhouses in small towns. And then they settle in. They open stores in Newbern, Goldsboro, Hickory, and they send their kids to college very quickly. Chapel Hill, NC State are the two main ones, obviously. And they graduate, become professionals. So that's the first wave. The second wave, which I'm part of as well as Berta and Samir, we came after the Civil War, and that was a major driving force for us. And when we came here, most of us came here to get education. We all have university degrees. In fact, on average, the Lebanese American in the United States has a higher degree than the average American, mostly as individuals, although Samir and his family is all here. But Berta and I came primarily by ourselves with a few relatives. And we came to, primarily it's mostly professionals. So you see a lot more doctors, lawyers, engineers, and also business women and businessmen as well.
You talked about the Civil War, the second wave. You and I will talk to Berta about that as well in a minute. But the first wave, what was there something driving people from Lebanon, or was it a trickle here to North Carolina?
So basically the Lebanese economy was heavily dependent on silk. The sericulture, which is silk cocoons, silk thread, silk textile, that was the big economy. In fact, about 70% of the gross domestic product in Lebanon in the 1860s, 1870s was silk. By the 1880s, that market has crashed, partly because the Japanese and the Chinese came into the market. The Germans discovered synthetic fiber, and American taste for silk has gone down. So all of a sudden, you see a lot of people with a lot of mouths to feed and not a whole lot of prospects within Lebanon. And so what's remarkable is the great majority have never set foot on a boat. I mean, it's really an amazing story in many ways because most of them lived in villages. They had never even seen a city for the most part. They walk or they rode a donkey down to the port of Beirut or Tripoli. They get on a ship that's going to America, and for all they knew, they're going to New York, but they sometimes arrive in Uruguay, like my grandfather, and they immediately get to work. And so what drove them is a dip in the economy and their search for a better life. And they all wanted to come back eventually. And some did, but the most stayed where they went.
Berta, tell us what that was like for you while you were there. Where were we living?
Well, for me, my parents died when I was 5, so I was in an orphanage already. And so when the war broke out, we were already in shelters. They showed us how to do, all the emergency stuff. And basically, from my recollection, about 10 years of staying in and out of shelters. And eventually we stopped going to school because of the war. Right. And, we couldn't finish high school. So I ended up, I had this vision of coming to the U.S. And I don't know how it worked out, but it worked out.
And how old were you when you came and what brought you?
I was 19. Mm. And I had some people that I knew here. Somehow I fixed it on a student visa and I came
and
to North Carolina.
And you went to school right away?
Yes, that's correct.
Went to NC State?
No, I didn't go straight to NC State. I went to a community college first, and then I transferred to NC State.
And was the vision beginning to clarify? Did you know what it is you wanted to do? And
not really. I had no idea. I just knew my alternative is going back to war. But I knew I did not want to be there.
What was the Lebanese community like? Did you find a Lebanese community here when you got here?
No, I did not. I was sort of on my own.
Did you stay connected to your family?
My family, yeah. And we didn't have, we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have regular phones. So I probably talked to my sisters maybe once every 2 years just to let them know that they're safe, to let them know that we're safe and know that they're safe.
Akram, tell me about those communities. Again, going back to that first wave, did Lebanese immigrants settle and kind of stay together, or did they have to disperse?
I think it depended upon the state where they went to. But in North Carolina, somewhere around 1920, the census that we have, we had about 1,000 Lebanese living in North Carolina, and they were dispersed. I think the larger concentrations would have been Charlotte or New Bern. And you're talking about 50 to 60 people. So really, they were quite dispersed in that sense. But they still tried to maintain a sense of connection. So for example, in 1926, they held something called the Grand Mahrajan. And that's a big festival that took place at the NC State Fairgrounds, to which people came from Georgia, from South Carolina, from Florida, from North Carolina, obviously. And it's a sense of reconnecting and renewing those ties. They would have food, they would have music, they would import singers from New York. And in essence, they continued to have these community organizations. There was something called the Hamana Club, where they would introduce their offspring to each other in the hope that they would get married. But generally speaking, the most of the years, they would just be dispersed throughout North Carolina.
And what about the dispersal throughout the United States? You talk about this crash of the silk economy in Lebanon. So lots of people must have left. Did many of them come to the South, or were most going elsewhere?
So in total, about a third to a half of the population of Lebanon immigrated between 1880 and 1920. Today, what's just a significant thing, there are as many Lebanese or descendants or people who descend from Lebanese roots outside Lebanon as there are inside Lebanon. If you put it in terms of China, that's equivalent to 1.2 billion Chinese outside. To this day, the Lebanese are truly the largest migratory, not in terms of numbers, but percentage-wise. And so to the United States, there are about 130,000 people who came here by 1920. The majority were in New England. Hmm. That's where most immigrants, actually, Italian, Poles, Jews, they all primarily went to New England. But the Lebanese went everywhere, in essence. You will find them in Alaska, Colorado, North Carolina. The South had probably about 15 to 20% of the overall population were dispersed in the South altogether.
Samir, tell us about your experience. You were in Lebanon during the Civil War as well. Tell us about your experience there.
I left Lebanon in 1974. So it was maybe a year prior to the serious war of Lebanon. But there was some indication of the war coming because incidents will happen. I was traveling between the north, going to Beirut, attending night classes after my high school, getting myself ready. But I've always had aspiration to come to United States. And in the early 70s, I got to meet an uncle who is one of the early comers to the United States, one of those immigrants Dr. Khater is talking about, who's became a success and aspiration for us. That's, if I may mention name, Mr. Musa Domet, who was North Carolina Museum of Art director at the time when I arrived to the area. So he was my sponsor. But growing up there, during that period, you could feel the tension coming, and it's not as easy to travel from one city to another. There were some incidents. And right after my arrival to the States, which is in 74, 75, the war started to become a serious war. And it started in the north, which the region where I grew up, it's a city, the second largest city of Lebanon, called Tripoli or Trablus. Grew up in that city. So it became a priority for me and my uncle to help the family, of course, escape.
How much family did you have back there at the time?
Well, the immediate family, and as you mentioned earlier, I'm owner of Niamond. I'm one of many of the family who we started Niamond. I'm one of four boys and two girls, that was a small family, by the way, for my mom and dad. But extended family, we most in Lebanon, you would be from a smaller community and you migrate to the city. So I grew up in North Lebanon, up in the mountain, and Akram had visited and was fascinated with the area. It's a pretty area. It's about 1,000-meter elevation.
What was it like for you to be here when all of that chaos was beginning and that turmoil, and knowing that you had family back there?
Yeah, that is true. That was extremely difficult time. And as the war started to take place, and it's like fire expanding into Lebanon, and lost contact and telephone communication, it became extremely difficult. And knowing that I have younger brothers in the city, actually one of my brother was serving in the military as the mandatory service time. So it was difficult. It was very difficult.
And how about when you got here? How was life for you here? How were you received here as an immigrant in this part of the world?
Well, again, I came to be with someone I admired and loved a lot, and landed in Raleigh, North Carolina. Actually, met wasn't much later. I had met and got married with someone I still my lovely wife. So my wife been here much longer. So that was a little bit of a support into integrating into the area. So I think I was mentored between my uncle and my wife to be part of the society, local society.
Berta, tell us about your business and how you got into it, and how things went for you as an immigrant to North Carolina.
Well, my transition was not near as easy as some years, but
what was difficult about it?
It was everything. I mean, from being called a terrorist from week one to finishing school.
This was what year?
Student visa. I can't disclose what year.
This was prior to 9/11.
Yes.
So before, you were being called a terrorist before 9/11.
Yes. Yes. It was. I don't know. I don't remember what major. I think Akram was called a terrorist at some point, I'm sure.
Well, I mean, it's. I think that there's an impression about the Middle East in general, regardless of whether it's 9/11 or not. If you look at Hollywood from the Valentino silent movie era to now, the impression is that it's a violent place. It's a place of people who have, you know, these terrible ideas and who act upon those terrible ideas, and we call them terrorists. So I think that's not unique. And you have to remember also there was the bombing of the Marine compound in Beirut.
Yeah. Right. Well, there were a number of terrorist acts from the 70s on that had been certainly in the news in that part of the world. So
that part was hard, the first 2 years, adjusting to everything and not having the support that Samir had. I think Akram's in the same boat, but starting the business is not a big deal. You know, it's not a big deal, but I think I look back as I reflect, Samir had all this family members and that kind of support, but we didn't. And
Well, tell us about your business. What are you doing?
I used to do a lot of events for UNICEF. We did fundraising. And so it was hard to find a spot, like a venue, to hold a party or raise money or whatever. So I started looking into different areas in Raleigh and the surrounding areas, and there wasn't that many places. So that's the business I have, is like a venue for weddings and events.
And that really involves, doesn't it, networking and being connected in a community to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of advertising.
A lot of advertising, getting connected. So somehow you did it.
Yeah.
Well, but I think that's important to keep in mind, if I may follow up very quickly on that. I mean, I think they're underselling their story in many ways. It's a story that is quite remarkable because, indeed, you arrive here. It's not only what you're called. It's the fact that you have, when you arrive, you have no roots. You're entering into society that is absolutely alien at so many different levels. The familiar stuff, the smells, the sights, the light is different. The environment is different. And so you have to acclimate very quickly in order to be successful. And I think the measure of success, and by the way, a recent book came out which identified the Lebanese as one of the most successful immigrant community in the United States. I mean, I think what you have is two examples of why they succeeded. And your question is a very good question for that. It's because they are able to immediately integrate into the larger community. And so Berta, for example, volunteers tons of stuff, including the International Festival. And Samir is a part of this pillar of this community. Neumond has become an institution, in essence. And that takes this openness. And I think that's what's unique about the Lebanese in some ways. It's our ability to be open to cultures, because Lebanon has always been a place of cross-cultures.
The crossroads, right? Yep. I mean, that the silk industry is important because a lot of the trade passes through.
Exactly.
And that's where you be. So, but talk about this, because I think it's remarkable. Neumond has been around since the 1970s. You opened it then?
Yes, 1977.
You're selling pita in Raleigh, North Carolina in 1977. How'd that go? Because 77...
Exactly. That question came to us so many times. You're making pita in Raleigh. Some people, you know, called it Frisbee. Some called it... it's the strange...
Baba Kahoo?
Exactly. So, you know, but necessities is what the mother of invention, right? So when the family came in here and we need to find our, you know, our native bread. I mean, we lived near the supermarket where we lived. We used to supplement with the, you know, American loaf, and the consumption so was so much. You can't do the same thing. But anyway, we got into making the Lebanese bread as to how we did it in Lebanon. And that was, too, inspired with my uncle. He thought that would be a good idea for the family to stay together and create a source of, you know, employment and living.
So, did it take a long time to catch on?
As a pita?
Yeah, so it's a great way to keep the family together, but you also have to sell this to people who have never seen it before. How long did it take before Raleigh embraced this kind of food?
I wish Dr. Khater was then available. I think things would have been much easier and faster, because it did take a long time.
Yeah.
It did take a long time, but it was... it was pretty rewarding, because whoever discovered us and the method we made the bread, and this is how we got connected with the old Lebanese community who came to this area. They found us, and they gave us that encouragement as they tried our bread, and they made it to say, this is just like our grandma did. And so we became discovered, and they were the original initial support for us to really sustain ourselves. And it's good thing at that time that we were naive and we don't know much about business.
Well, like, whatever it was, it worked, because it's certainly a wildly successful restaurant now. I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Samir Salah is the owner of the Lebanese bakery and restaurant Neumond. Berta Al-Shakar Powell is a Lebanese-American immigrant and the owner of the events company Bienvenue. And Akram Khater is a history professor at North Carolina State and the curator of Cedars in the Pines, an exhibit that you can see at the North Carolina Museum of History in Raleigh. Coming up next, bomb-sniffing African rats. Stay tuned.